Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come up with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. My name is Ben Baker, and welcome back to the show. Thanks for everybody for tuning in each and every week and for sharing this with your friends. Go to the show. The show is yourlivingbrand.live. If you go to yourlivingbrand.live, you can subscribe to the show. Pick the sound file that you want. If you like Spotify, go Spotify. If you want iHeart, go iHeart. If you want iTunes, go iTunes. Wherever you're comfortable. But you know what? Leave me a message. Let me know what you think. Let me know if there's a guest that you want me to have on. Love hearing from you. Every week, we bring a new guest on. And this week, I have Alon Zabert. Alon and I have met yet another person I meet through LinkedIn. You would think that everybody I meet is through LinkedIn. If you're not on LinkedIn, if you're not doing business on LinkedIn, everybody, you got to get on LinkedIn and you have to learn how to do it right. But Alon and I met and we started off this great conversation and he has something called emotional relevance that he's got to talk to you about. And I love where he's going with this. So Alon, welcome to the show. Let's get into this.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Ben. Yes. Pleasure being here. I've listened to your show before. You know, it's funny for us that have been working online as some of our day to day, we hear what's going on these days with the virus and all. It's like, what do you mean you just recently joined LinkedIn? This has been 45% of my life since it started. It's part of the Facebook for business. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah. I've been on LinkedIn since 2005, so about 15 years now.
Yeah. It's the same thing with online, right? A lot of people really, it's the online communication is new to them. But for me and many others that I know, you know, I've been doing online sessions for 20 years. It's been part of my, I love meeting people, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know me, you know, I need the hug. But online has been part of my life. It's just now a bigger part. But it's interesting shift.
Yeah, and I think it's getting people to understand that technology is a tool, not a crutch. And I think that that's what we need to be thinking of technology as. How does it make our lives better? And if it's not making our lives better, either we're not using it right or we're using the wrong technology.
I will tell you something that I say at every opportunity I can. The best technology in the world, in my mind, is technology you don't know is there. Right? If it becomes just like a good referee on a basketball game, right? If you notice them, they didn't do a good job. So when people need to realize when they are online, stop asking, can you see my screen? Someone will tell you if they don't see your screen, right? But when you ask that, right, you make it an issue. And it's like, just ignore the technology. If you can get to a position where you ignore the technology, like you said, it's just an enabler, right? Then that's the best thing. You focus on the content.
Exactly. I mean, it's funny because over the last 12, 14 weeks, I've been asked to do a lot of virtual workshops, a lot of keynote addresses, everything online. And I've probably been on 14 or 15 different technology platforms, without a lie. I've done enough that I've probably been on 14 or 15 technology platforms. What I've noticed is I have to go online a week ahead of time with all of these ones that I've never used before just to make sure I'm comfortable with it so it doesn't become an issue when you're live. So it becomes just a tool that just becomes part of your right hand. But it's interesting that a lot of technology is set up in a way that it was a symptom for the person who programmed it, but not a symptom for anybody else.
Unfortunately, you're right. And I think Zoom has done a great job. You've seen me present this week on Remo, which I think has some quirks to go through, but really the psychology of our behavior online, you can tell that they put a lot of effort in thinking through it. Look, I'll tell you something interesting, and we can use it as a segue to passion, which is emotional relevance. On my blog, I have a blog called 2 Weeks Notice, A Touch of Emotional Relevance Every Couple of Weeks. And if I may, a quick plug-in, alonzaibert.com. It's my website, alonzaibert.com. You can find my blog.
Don't worry, it'll be in the show notes. We'll make sure everybody gets it.
Awesome. Anyways, I wrote a post on my blog, I don't know, a few months ago, about the first line is the deepest, right? Kind of along the lines of there's no second chance for first impression. And when you think about our behavior as human beings, there's, you know, a lot into our comfort zone. We're used to something, and then when we need to go through something new, there's an instinctive resentment, right? Now, the biggest advantage of technologies and really anything is make it easy. Now, we'll talk as much as you want about what I refer to as emotional anchor. And a lot of technology companies, retail definitely has that in mind. Make sure that the first time we experience their service, their technology, their product, there's an emotional anchor. There's no second chance for a first impression. So they want to make sure it's a positive one, of course, but that it's an emotional as well. Let me give you an interesting example. Do you remember the first time you used Uber?
Absolutely.
All right. Why do you remember it? Because you clicked on a button on your phone and magically somebody with a car appeared a few minutes later. It showed you where it is, right? I did a survey online the other day, and it's unbelievable. By far, 90-something percent of people remember the first time they used Uber because they made it very easy to use, super easy, but also emotional. So when you go to a new technology, right, they got to make sure it's easy. That's the first thing. You know, article, the guy who founded Zoom, basically he worked for WebEx before. And he said all the quirks and the issues that WebEx had, and they added them over time as patches. I took them and I said, no, these are the main things that we need to do as human beings, and created an online meeting, you know, environment. That's why Zoom is so, you know, it works. It just works. It doesn't have to be fancy. It works. The emotional piece, that's a different topic. That's why I brought Uber and not Zoom. But ease of use, super important. Now, just a bit about emotional anchor, which is probably one of the most important elements when creating emotional relevance. Because in essence, emotional relevance is the ability to take your customer, take your partner, take your colleague through an emotional experience. Because when we go through an emotional experience, scientifically, psychologically, it's engraved in our mind. We simply remember it. I can ask you to go back many, many years ago and think about things that happened in your life. Probably the biggest, most substantial example I can do is ask you, where were you when the Twin Towers got hit?
And I know exactly where I was. I know exactly what I was doing.
And if I ask you to think for 30 seconds, close your eyes, I can guarantee you, you will know details that will blow your mind off, like the colors of the wall, or maybe even what you wore at that moment, because you've gone through an emotional experience. So if you learn how to take your customer, if you can take your customer through an emotional experience and set that emotional anchor through the first interaction, right? The first interaction of that communication cycle, sales cycle, whatever it is, then the beauty is if you know how to trigger that emotional experience again, right? They relive that again. And this is how their stickiness, level of stickiness, brand loyalty becomes much higher. And that's what you want. So to take it even another step further, okay? And Ben, please tell me if I get a little too philosophical here.
Don't worry. When we start talking about Immanuel Kant, we know that you've gotten too philosophical for me.
So we communicate with our customers, with our colleagues through many means of communication. Email, LinkedIn, Facebook Messenger, Instagram, face-to-face, online. These are all channels of communication, right? And each time we talk to them, there's a cycle there. There's a the communication cycle, right? So if we can, in not every one of those, but every now and then, throw a little emotional anchor and then remind them about it, it's just science. Think of it as a formula, mathematical formula. I'll give you a quick example that happened to me recently. And by the way, emotional could be laughter, right? Could be something a little scary. Could be something frustrating, okay?
That's right. So it could be the good or the bad.
And it doesn't have to be dramatic. That's what I'm saying. So I was on a call with this guy in Boston, right? Never mind the reason why we're talking, trying to sell a service, doesn't matter. But at one point during the conversation, he's in Boston, and he said something along the lines of where everybody knows your name, right? Now, immediately, and this is a lot of training and a lot of, you know, I'm doing it for a while. So my antennas are up like much higher than the average sales guy. So I'm picking up things. So he said, where everybody knows your name. And then I paused for a second. I said, I see what you did there. And he goes, what are you talking about? I said, Boston, everybody knows your name. He goes, what are you talking about? And then I started singing. Sometimes you want to go where
everybody knows your name.
Exactly.
Cheers is a wonderful thing.
And Cheers is in Boston.
Of course.
It's in Boston. Well, you know that. I don't know if everyone knows that. But as soon as I said it, he's like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Great. Then we said goodbye. It was a Friday. And it's amazing now. Even when I tell you, I remember it was a Friday. This is 4 months ago, right? I remember it was a Friday because for me, I used to live in Boston. Cheers meant something to me. It doesn't matter. But it was, for me, the emotional relevance at that point. I sent him a follow-up email and said, thank you very much, blah, 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 and greetings from Atlanta, which is where I'm based right now. Or I hope you enjoyed the weekend in Boston where everybody knows your name, something like that. Kind of bring that back, right? So if you think about it for a second, what I did is I thought how he is going to respond, react when he reads that. I also thought how he's going to feel when he reads that. So in my mind, I'm picturing him going, that's it. That's all you need. That was a little trigger, right? Now, he sent me an email back. And he said, by the way, I'm going to be in Atlanta in a month and a half. And I'd love to see the city where everybody knows your name. Okay? So now it's become a little thing there.
Absolutely. And it's built a connection.
Correct. The connection is emotional because we kind of laughed about it. I made the visual connection to him as well because he told me how he took his kid there to see Cheers and told him about the story and what have you and et cetera, et cetera. Now, look, it's not dramatic. It's not the guy was crying over me and whatever. But psychologically and scientifically, it's proven that when you trigger those emotions over and over and over, the connection is much deeper. The connection is much more meaningful. And what do we need it for? To be remembered and to add value. The essence of emotional relevance is to be remembered and to add value. And when you do that, your sales closing rates are increased, your customer retention rate is increased, your acceptance rates to jobs has proved to be increased, etc. So just a quick example, of course.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. And I love that. And, you know, I would add to that, it also builds trust. And trust is a huge factor. Trust is a huge factor. But when we're looking at emotional relevance and the anchors, I love the fact that it's an anchor because it's something that you can go back to. And you guys may be talking about where everybody knows your name for the next 10 years. And it will be something, it'll be your own little thing that you guys can talk about and have that thing that it brings it back to your initial conversation and be a genesis story for you guys of all the work that you've done from this point forward. But it's creating that loyalty, whether that customer base is internal, whether it's employees, or whether it's external customers. It's getting people to understand that there is a reason for them to care about you. And I think that that's going to be something that we should try to unplug.
You got it. I mean, you and I didn't really prepare for this session. So I'm just shocked that you got it, like, unbelievable, right? And you can tell I get excited about it because you can tell when people get it. On my website, the front page, you know, I wrote there, essentially what we offer is trust. And trust is based on emotions and relevancy. Now, it's over time. It's over time. But I guarantee you one thing. If this guy that I spoke to from Boston, let's say in 2 months, he is traveling for work and he's getting into the hotel and it's late at night. He just finished dinner with his customers and he's taking his showers, getting in bed and flicking through the channels. And all of a sudden, there's a episode of Cheers starting and the theme song comes up. Who do you think he's going to think about?
Cliff Claiborne.
He's going to think about me.
Of course he is.
And that's what I want. I want my customers to think about me and not the competition, right? So people ask me, okay, what's the secret sauce here? What's the elements? What is the recipe? And in my trainings, in my speaking engagement, I speak about three main elements for creating the DNA of emotional relevance. The first one is to stand out, right? Keep in mind, again, the underline is to be remembered and to add value. But the first one, so now how do you create it? The first of the three elements is to stand out. What does it mean to stand out? To be a little different, right? Whoever is listening here and they have, you know, they sell service, products, doesn't matter. How many times have you gotten to a situation where you know that you made it to the best and final? It's you and maybe one more company or two more companies. And you know that the buyer is looking at the three proposals, right? After they checked out three more or four more or 17 more, doesn't really matter. It all kind of looks the same, right? Maybe different colors, maybe different logo. It all kind of looks the same. The pricing is very close. But if you stood out on this document or when you met them, stood out, right? I dare you. I want to push you to do something a little different. Just a little different. It's okay. Here's a quick story. I was presenting in Houston. A few years ago, I was doing work for this media company, and we had to pitch to executives in the retail world. These are executives, Ben, Starbucks, Target, Neiman Marcus, CVS was there, DSW was there. We had to pitch them on our offering, whatever it is. They were sitting at a conference room, right? Back to back 15 minutes pitches from different companies to offer them their offering. We were presenting right after lunch. So they've gone that morning through at least 10 or 12 pitches, right? Now everybody went to lunch. We got a few minutes to set the room before everybody came back into the room. And as they started coming back, I was ambushing the first two that came in. So you introduce yourself and you do the dance, right? And here's a card. And yes, I'm Alon and who you are with, etc. And as they're gathering, I kind of got a little friendly with one. This is all 47 seconds in the making, right?
Right.
And I kind of say something to that person a little bit out loud. And I say, hey, this room is dark. It's cold. You guys probably been cooped in here the whole day. Why don't we take it outside? And the guy looked up and he said, oh my God, can we? I'd love to. Beautiful day out. Right? Now, that's all I needed, right?
Sure. Let's go.
Because one other person kind of heard it. I said it loud enough. Some other person heard it. And you could say they kind of picked up their head, looked immediately and said, just in their eyes, said, can we? And I said, you know what? Screw it. Let's do it. Let's go. Now, they didn't know that I paid somebody $10 to set up this beautiful round table outside under a huge tree so we have shade, right? So you got to do the basic sales things, of course. But we went outside. I couldn't present outside. There was no projector, no nothing. So it turned to be a conversation, right? You have to know your stuff and what you're talking about. Let me tell you something. The following year, I got an email from one of the organizers who said, we just finished the show this year and we missed you. People still talk about your meeting under the tree. Okay? So stand out. There are many ways to do it. More subtle, less subtle. I'm nothing but subtle, but you know what I mean. The second one is to make an impact. Okay? And here, like you said earlier, Ben, I want to mention that it cuts both ways. If you make a negative impact, right, you'll push away your customer same distance from your brand as if you do a positive, if you get a positive impact, how closer you get them, right? Problem is you're going to have to work twice as hard to get them back that distance.
Well, the problem is when people are emotionally tied to your brand, they're going to tell everybody. When people are negatively attached to your brand, i.e. you've done something to really tick them off one way, shape, or form, they're going to tell everybody too. So it's a matter of sitting there going, I'm a big believer of you need to take that risk and you need to differentiate yourself and you need to sit there and say, who are my customers, and treat them like gold. It's the companies that sit there and ignore their people that get people talking about them negatively. And that's how they create the emotional relevance that's in a negative matter that causes people to talk negatively about them forever.
There's a research. I just want to disagree on one thing you said, which is people tell everybody if they're emotionally connected and if they're not, or if they're emotionally negatively impacted. There's a research that shows that people that are unhappy with your service or felt that they got screwed with your service, et cetera, anything negative, will talk much more than positive. It's much harder to get somebody who had a great experience, good experience to talk versus somebody who's frustrated, okay? That's why you work that much harder if somebody gets negatively impacted from what you said. So we talk about making an impact. And so I'll share another story with you. A former customer of mine from New York, we were working for a while together. I've been selling him some software solutions and they just acquired a new customer that actually doubled overnight their business. Doubled. So you can imagine the operational back-end challenges that they've had. And back then, when I was selling that software actually was helping them in the back-end operation. So we really created a good relationship from the get-go and I helped them in the project management side as well. And then one Saturday, I get an email from him on around 11 a.m. Saturday. Now, this is 11 a.m. on a Saturday, and in the email, I realized that him and the CTO are in the office in New York, Midtown Manhattan. I'm in Atlanta. At 12:15, an hour and 15 minutes later, Ben, there was a knock on the door in their office, and a pizza delivery guy, right, was there with a nice little note from me personally wishing them that they don't have to stay for that much longer and enjoy lunch, pizza, and I'm thinking of them.
Perfect.
Listen, I get the chills now just remembering it, okay? And if I call this guy who's become a friend of mine over the years and I tell him that story, I mean, it touched them so much that it really made an impact. On the flip side, as we talked about the negative one, be careful. I got an email confirmation from shoes I bought my son the other day online from Adidas. And the confirmation was awesome, really. Just all you want to know, all my son wants to know after I booked it is one thing.
When are they showing up?
Exactly. So the email was like this big picture of a calendar with when it's arriving, also suggesting to send me updates via text and via Facebook Messenger. Great. Touching all the channels, two-way channels. Awesome. But one thing they missed is the ad that came with the email, which was an ad for a sports bra with a woman standing there wearing the sports bra. This is where they lost me, of course. This is where, are you kidding me?
So was this an email or was this a link to a website so that they didn't have any control over
No, it was an email.
Oh, it was an email. So they had absolutely the wrong image in with the email.
Absolutely the wrong image. Absolutely the wrong image. Yes. So we talked about standing out, making an impact. The third one is to get personal. And unfortunately, Ben, in our world today, modern world, and specifically in the US, people tend to get less and less personal. As a naive, optimistic guy, I want to believe that this pandemic, one of the good things that comes up, will come out of this pandemic, that we will tend to be more personal, okay? Because it kind of puts us all together. There's a one big global sense of we're all in it together. And you look online, people now have a higher tendency to share emotions.
Absolutely. I'm hoping 6 months, a year, 2 years down the road, it's the same.
I hope it stays. And if nothing else, at least so people don't look at me as weird as they do when I, God forbid, hug somebody.
Oh, don't do that.
Or God forbid, tell you at the end of our first conversation, hey, Ben, as one adult male to another adult male, dude, I like you. I like you. I'd like to be your friend, right? And it's so weird because people look at you, what, sharing emotions? There's research that shows that the U.S. society is one of the most touch-phobic societies in the world. And unfortunately, there's a direct correlation from that to the level of violence, depression, suicide level in the society, right? So personal space and other things, and people are, God forbid, touchy-touchy. But here's the amazing thing. Us as human beings, the DNA, right? We all need to be hugged. We all need to be touched, whether you like it or not. We need, again, DNA, evolution. We need to feel hugged, even if not physically hugged. We need to feel hugged. And this is a big element when I work with my customers. Even if you send an email, there are elements in emotional relevance that you can make them feel hugged, right?
Absolutely.
Virtually hugged. So when I talk about get personal, here's a great example. Do you remember the Coke campaign where they put names on the bottles?
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time you actually went to a store and you looked for your name?
Yeah, they couldn't find it.
You couldn't find it. That's a risk they took.
Absolutely. But it's amazing because there's friends of mine that all had their names on their Coke bottle and I didn't. Now, I'm a Coke fan. I'll continue to be a Coke fan. But there are millions and millions of names out there in different spellings. And for the people that they hit, they hit an emotional tone. I will guarantee you there wasn't an Alon bottle. Even in Israel, I would be surprised if they had an Alon bottle.
Well, I'll tell you my story with the Coke. But I want the listeners to actually think for a second where and when were you when you went to look for the Coke bottle? How did you feel when you found the bottle with your name? What did you do? And how did you feel when you did it? But I'll bet you something, Ben. The impact, the psychological impact on you not finding your name, okay, actually got the back of your mind to say, I actually want to be part of it. So I'm going to keep looking. How many refrigerators did you look at? How many grocery stores when you saw names, other names, and you said, oh, hold on, maybe I'll find it. Maybe it's here. How many?
Honestly, for me, not that many. Because I sat there and said, okay, fine. I got a name that they didn't pick. That's fine. But I get what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. Maybe I'm the wrong person for this. But I looked at it and I sat there and said, I realized that I saw the people that went off and every single time they went into a Coke freezer, they grabbed the Coke that had their name on it. So I get what you're saying, but I'm saying that as a marketing tactic, you're going to emotionally attach yourself to the people that you said, okay, here's the first 1,000 names or 500 names or whatever that we're going to be able to be successful, that we're going to be able to get. But if you spell your name Brandy with 2 R's and 3 E's, you're not going to find your name on that list. And what is the connotation going to be for you if you sit there and say, well, how come they don't have a name with my name on it?
Look, I didn't come up with anything. I just coined the term emotional relevance. The retail world, they have been at it and they've been getting us through it for years. Coke knows how to do their stuff.
They are very good at it.
AT&T, a couple of years ago, started selling their bills, monthly bills, personalized bills. right? With a little animated movie clip that says, you know, hey, Ben, here is your bill. They want you to feel a little bit more, you know, this is okay. It's not that bad, actually. It's mine. And it's not just another number. I'm customer number, right? Make it personal. They know it.
Hey, if you go on the Nike website, and I believe you still can, you can create your own custom sneakers. Think about that. You can create your own custom sneakers that are just made for you. Your size, your colors, your fabric within certain parameters. But those things are available. When we make things personal for people, there is that emotional attachment. There is that emotional relevance. There is that anchor. Absolutely.
So it's the same thing with Starbucks, right? When you wait for your coffee, and I was in a store, a Starbucks store, 3 months BC. Did you see now people using BC before Corona? 3 months BC, I was in California at a busy Starbucks store. And I'm standing there at the edge of, after I put my order in, and standing there with about 7-8 other people waiting for their coffee, right? And all of a sudden, that cute girl behind the counter, Alon, your coffee is ready. Whatever it is that I ordered, doesn't matter. Dude, it's a little bit of a rush right now, right? She knows my name. She knows who I am. She knows my coffee. And by the way, you're looking around on the other seven people as suckers. You know, you haven't
got, I've got mine. You're still waiting for yours.
Exactly. There are elements, just like Coke with the name, right? There are elements of gamification. It's all there. So whatever service you're offering, not just products, even if it's software, when you communicate, when you send an RFP response, right? I challenge you, right? Be personable. Make the impact. Even speak about your emotions. Yes, in your RFP response, it will make you a little different, right? You got to be subtle sometimes. You got to know the rules of the game.
You have to know your audience.
You got to know your audience, but it's okay. Don't go overboard, but it's okay to make an impact. And I just wish corporate America will be much more open to that, because eventually, like you said earlier, it's trust and it's the human nature, right? I'd rather buy from somebody, make relationship, business relationship with somebody that I trust, like you said, that I feel something about. And look, I am very, very lucky. I have planted so many emotional anchors, and I get on a weekly basis notes from people that read my blog and said, oh my God, 10 years ago, you and I did this, or not even my anchors. You know, there are anchors that are being dropped without us knowing sometimes. What I do is I take that methodology and work with business people, salespeople, customer success people, executives, business owners, how to control that methodology to be able to actually trigger that, right? And so you can tell I'm super passionate about it, and I just hope people will be more open to it.
Well, Alon, let's leave it there, because I mean, we could go for another hour, but I want to ask you one last question before I let you go.
Okay.
This is a question I ask everybody. When you get off the stage or leave a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
Genuine. I want people to know, you brought tears to my eyes right now, Ben, seriously, because I literally pictured myself getting off stage, and it's an interesting feeling. Genuine. I really want to know that people are happy with, or the feedback from what I said, that it makes sense. You know, I wear my heart on my sleeve. What you see is what you get with me. So genuine is what came to mind, which is my form of virtual hug. How's that?
I love it. I love it. We all need more virtual hugs. We all need to be genuine. We all need to be authentically us. I can't be Alon. Alon can't be me. But you know what? Be ourselves and be the best version of you that you can be. I love that. So Alon, thank you very much for being on the show. You dropped gold. You've made my audience better, and you made me better. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Ben. Really, I appreciate it more than you know it.
Take care.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, We help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?